Hello, and welcome to episode 9 of Inside the BDO, the podcast. My name is Andrew Sinclair. I had expected that this month's episode would be pretty quiet after the events in Prestatyn and Wolverhampton were cancelled, but the last few weeks and even days have seen a plethora of BDO news come out, and there's actually a lot for me to discuss. This episode, I'll begin by discussing the events that have happened since the last episode, which were mostly the back end of June, but there have been a couple in July. We'll start with the BDO ranked events, and I'll move on to discuss the Six Nations, the Gold Cup, and the WDF Europe Youth Cup, which took place last weekend in Turkey. There's also an interview on this episode with David Stretch Evans, the Lancastrian who has had an excellent 2019 so far on the BDO circuit. I spoke to the Challenge Tour event winner about his year to date, the differences between the Challenge Tour and the BDO, and his plans for the next few years. I'll then move on to discuss all the recent news, including the cancellation of the Finder Masters, the BDO's new deal with 180 and L-Style, and the fact that we finally got information about the World Trophy. And then, to round up, there'll be a preview of a pretty packed couple of weeks on the BDO circuit as we end July and move into the frantic month that is August. One of the first events to happen since I recorded the last episode was the Austria Open Vienna. The BDO made its annual pilgrimage to Austria at the end of June, and for the second year in a row, a Belgian emerged victorious in the men's competition. Last year, the event was run by Roger Gizmo Janssen, but this year it was Sven Verdonk, who came through the field of more than 200 players to come out the winner. I fancied Verdonk to go well before the tournament. I mean, he reached the Welsh Open quarterfinal back in May, but he was at another level of dominant, really, in Vienna. He eventually beat the unseeded Austrian Markus Straub in the final. Straub was a surprise finalist, but he got there courtesy of victories over Michael Unterbuchner and Jeffrey van Egdom in the quarters and semis, respectively. But he didn't have enough of Verdonk in the final, with the big Belgian winning 6-2. Finland's Kaisu Räikkönen won her second title of the year in the ladies' event, beating Jitka Sisarova of the Czech Republic 4-2 in the final. The only British event since I last recorded was the LDO Ladies Classic. The Ladies Classic was played up in Gainsborough and Lincolnshire, and this year the event was a Cat B for the first time, and unsurprisingly, the bigger points and the bigger prize money attracted a bigger field, with 86 ladies battling it out to emerge victorious. In the end, the event was won by none other than 15-year-old sensation Beau Greaves. Greaves beat Lisa Ashton and Laura Turner to make the final, where she met Anastasia Dobromyslova. Anastasia played some great stuff in a nip-and-tuck final, with it going down to a deciding leg. Anastasia looked as though she'd put herself in pole position to win after a couple of big ton-plus scores to start the final leg. But Greaves held her nerve better on the doubles to win her fifth consecutive BDO ranking title. She really is some player, and it's amazing to think how good she is now. And as I said on the last episode, you hope that she's able to maintain the level she's at now, not only throughout this year and the few years ahead, but into a really, really long and productive career. We talk about how Lisa Ashton, Anastasia Dobromyslova, Trina Galova, Mikuru Suzuki are always going to be the one who hopefully helps the ladies' game explode, certainly over the next 10 to 15 years, and her rise is certainly something to behold. And there's been one American ranking event since the last episode was recorded, and that was the Cherry Bomb International in Deerfield Beach, Florida. Danny Baggish, who won the North American Championship just a couple of weeks ago, he won the event in Florida by beating Robin Aubrey of the Bahamas in the final. Great win from Baggish, who clearly showed that he was a man in form before the events in Las Vegas. Also in the tournament, Leonard Gates reached the quarterfinals, and that run closes the gap between himself and Joe Chaney at the top of the regional table to just 5 points. With just one event left this season, the Witch City Open in September, I think it is, there's a lot left on the table, and hopefully we could be seeing a debutant at Lakeside next year representing the US region. And the only other ranking event since the last episode, last month, was the Australian Grand Masters. It was downgraded to a Category B this year, which was a little bit of a shame because I think Australia might be the strongest region in the BDO system at the moment. Before the event, I had to emerge victorious, and I got one right, which was nice. Okay, it's not most extravagant pick in the world to tip Qish to do well. She pretty much dominates that scene over there. But she was fantastic in the ladies' event and sealed the title with a victory over Barb Smith. As for the men's, Jeremy Fagg got to the quarterfinals of the competition, which was actually won impressively by Aaron Morrison. Morrison might not have been a name many had heard of or expected big things of before the event, but he played fantastically throughout the weekend, and he really capitalised on some of the form he showed in other Australian events and converted it through a long tournament and a long day to win the biggest prize of his career so far. He won the final over Mike Bonser, who people recognise from DPA events, and also I think he played in a couple of the World Series events last year as well. In the semis, Morrison and Bonser beat Mal Cumming and Justin Thompson, who obviously played at Lakeside at the start of this year. And with that win, Morrison confirmed his place at the inaugural Australian Open to be played at the start of August. That competition, which will have a similar format to the old Finder Masters of round-robin stages, will feature Cumming, Thompson, Jim Williams and Scott Mitchell, who were invited as the top two ranked WDF players at the time, Peter Machin, Gordon Glenmothers and many more. There'll also be two last chance qualifiers in New South Wales, the 29th and 30th of July, for people to fill up. I think it's the final eight spots for that event. Moving over to the non-ranked international competition that has been played since then, and that was the Six Nations, which took place 21st to the 23rd of June in Assen in the Netherlands. I spoke to Alan Souter, the Scotland captain, in the last episode, and he was raving about the Six Nations, what a great competition it is, and how the kind of constant one-leg shootout nature of the competition takes him back to the days of playing in the pub, where sort of winner stays on rules that I'm sure many of us will be familiar with. And as always, the Six Nations were a really entertaining event. It was run by the Dutch. It was ran pretty much to perfection. There's some great streams through Winmow TV and YouTube over the course of the weekend, and a variety of winners, which is always nice. In the overall ladies competition, England came out on top, which, I mean, when you looked at the lineup that England put forward, wasn't a huge surprise, but they edged out a very, very impressive Wales squad 5-4. England actually came from 4-3 down in that final to win. Fallon Sherrick and Dieter Hedman holding their nerve in their final singles games to seal the match for England 5-4. The men's event was won by the Dutch team of Chris Landman, Willem Mandigers, Martijn Kleermaker, Jeffrey Sparredans and young Wessel Nyman, with Landman sealing a 13-11 win for the Dutch team over Northern Ireland in the men's team final. Both semis finished 13-12, really nip and tuck affairs, with Northern Ireland edging out Wales and the Dutch beating England. I think Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland are often the surprise packages of the Six Nations, because they're often the teams people know least about. Scotland, England, Wales and obviously the Dutch are teams with a number of sort of household names within the BDO and county system. But Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland are often forgotten about. But this is the second year in a row where Northern Ireland have been incredibly impressive. The Dutch women lost in the semis of that competition. And subsequently, it was announced that Aileen de Graaf and Sharon Prinz appear to have retired from the national team. It's a real shame because they're some incredibly talented ladies, but the Dutch are in a privileged position, really, in that they do have one of the deeper female ranks in the ladies' game. You've got the likes of Priscilla Steenbergen, obviously Anke Zylstra was there that weekend, Vanessa Zoidema, and you've got some talented girls on the come as well, like Rosanna van der Velde, Leila Brussel. Obviously, it's a shame that de Graaf and Prinz are walking away. They're still young. You hope they might come back, but the Dutch ladies are going to have certainly a different look in the coming international competitions. In the charity singles events, the Welsh were absolutely dominant. They had two semi-finalists in the men's competition, three semi-finalists in the ladies' competition, and when all was said and done, they ended up being the country that gave us both the singles champions. Rhiannon O'Sullivan won an all-Welsh ladies' final 5-0 over Chris Savary, whilst Jim Williams beat Neil Duff 5-1 in the men's final. Moving on to some British non-ranking action, and the start of July we had the Gold Cup, where Jim Williams was also victorious in the prestigious competition. Played at Rotherham's Magna Centre, Williams beat Mark Dewsbury, Tex Horton, Craig Venman and Terry Stubbs before beating Cheshire's Daniel Ayres 6-0 in the Gold Cup final. BDO Men's Gold Cup pairs title went to the Suffolk pairing of Curtis Hammond and Brett Claydon, whilst Beau Greaves continued her stunning run in the ladies' event, winning both the singles and pairs. I think that took her to more than 10 titles within a 7-8 week period, which is just incredible. In the singles final, she averaged 79.95 in her 5-0 whitewash against Fallon Sherrick of Buckinghamshire. Whilst in the pairs, she joined Rachel Brooks to win 4-0 against the Gwynedd pair of Shireen Downs and Emily Mitchell. The Gold Cup really is one of my favourite competitions of the year because you get to see a lot of players that are perhaps not hugely familiar to a lot of people. Obviously, there's your BDO regulars, the British and Welsh and Scottish guys that you see on a regular basis in BDO competitions. But you often see players that who only play county level, or you often only see at internationals, that like Nigel Hayden, for example. And the Gold Cup's a fantastic competition because you get some really, really great players in there who you don't see a lot of on the tour, but they're incredibly dangerous and capable of playing at a very high standard. And that was no different this year. The Gold Cup can be a springboard to something a bit bigger for some players. We've seen the likes of Gary Stone and Wayne Warren have really deep runs in the past. And this year, it was some really great action in the Rotherham's Magna Centre. I know there were some issues to do with potential urinating in water glasses and players not having water on the stage and stuff, which obviously aren't great. And you'd hope that with the venue also secured for next year, something will be done about it by the time next year's events come around, so that there's certainly not a repeat of such unsavoury incidents. And moving on to the most recent non-ranking event, that was the WDF Europe Youth Cup. I know there were some people were saying that they'd not had tremendous volume of updates during the competition, but I thought updates were fairly easy to access, to be perfectly honest. I felt kept fairly well informed over the course of the proceedings. And there's some really good action. You had 13 boys teams this year, 10 girls teams, and the big winners were Leighton Bennett of England and Tamara Kovac of Hungary. The annual competition involves singles, pairs and team events. And in the boys' singles, England's Bennett continued his excellent 2019 with victory. Leighton Bennett beat both David Zaruba of the Czech Republic and Scottish sloper Connor Mitchell in the group stage before seeing off Robin Radloff of Germany, Dutchman Danny Janssen and the Welshman Connor Hopkins in the early knockout phases. Bennett beat Luke van der Kwast of the Netherlands 2-0 in the semi-finals, and he met his fellow Dutch compatriot Jurgen van der Velde, the 2018 JDC World Champion, in the final. Bennett won that final 3-1 with a 77.46 average to take home the trophy. Van der Velde and van der Kwast did taste victory in the boys' pairs competition, though, securing the title with a 4-3 win against the Czech tandem of Sedivi and Hudek. The Irish quartet of Keane Barry, Killian Heffernan, Dylan Slevin and Damien Moore have been tipped to do well pre-tournament. I know Francis Carragher on Twitter was tipping Keane Barry to go all the way in the singles. But the Irish team had seen very little reward for their endeavours in the singles and pairs events, with Barry and Slevin recording their best results with quarter-final runs in the singles. The Irishmen redeemed themselves on the Saturday, though, as they secured a dramatic 9-8 victory in the boys' team final against the Netherlands. Over in the ladies' side of things, and many had expected Beau Greaves to continue her recent rich reign of form, myself included, but she was stunningly beaten 3-0 in the semi-finals by eventual winner Tamara Kovac. Greaves had won all four group games for the loss of just one leg, and she continued that with a 3-1 win over Scotland's Sophia McKinley in the quarterfinals, but she had no answers for Kovac in the semi. Kovac had actually only finished second in her group and probably was an enormous underdog for that semi-final, but she performed fantastically. And it was an ironic real twist in the tournament in that the only person she lost to in the group stage was the Dutch thrower Lorena Rietbergen, and it was Rietbergen who Kovac beat in the final 4-3 to lift the title in surprising fashion. Good luck to her, tremendous form from her, and hopefully we'll see her continue to develop over the coming years, because we need more variety in the ladies' game, and having a strong female player from Eastern Europe would be fantastic. Or should I say some more strong female talent from Eastern Europe? There's already some great ladies. Obviously, you've got Karolina Podgorska, but there's also some other talented Europeans playing in the BDO ladies events, like Veronika Ihas of Hungary, Jana Konovska, and Jitka Sisarova, amongst a few. England secured their second title of the weekend in the girls' pairs, which was great, with Beau Greaves and Shannon Reeves teaming up to beat the Scottish pair of Sophie McKinley and Chloe O'Brien 4-3. When you put all those results together, it meant that the Netherlands were crowned overall champion in the boys' division and England were crowned overall champions for the girls. Some really great action over in Ankara, and it's always great to see youth darts. I personally really enjoy watching them, and the talent level of some of them is just incredible. And it's great to see players from Gibraltar and Ireland and the Netherlands. Obviously, the Dutch were fantastic. Three of their four players got to the semi-finals of the boys, and the other one was Danny Jansen, who lost to Leighton Bennett, who actually went on to win the whole thing. So, I mean, the Dutch are just incredible. But, I mean, it was great to see some of the Czech players look really good. Some of the Turkish lads, actually, I thought were quite impressive as well. Which is always, it's always great to see. The more developed and the more wider range of players we're getting, it's just fantastic for the growth of the game, especially from the youth level, because these guys are the stars of tomorrow, really. Before I move into discussing the BDO news of recent weeks, here's the interview I managed to get with David Stretch Evans, a two-time BDO ranking event semi-finalist earlier this week. I am now very grateful to be joined by David Stretch Evans. How are you, David?
I'm very well, Andrew. How are you?
Oh, I'm not too bad, thanks, mate. You're up to the top 20 in the BDO men's rankings now, and you've picked up £400 on the Challenge Tour this year. Are you happy with 2019?
Yes, I am in a way. But just in the BDO side of it, it has been going quite well. Getting to quite a few quarterfinals, and obviously with Selsey, two semi-finals as well.
Certainly. Was those two semi-finals in Selsey the highlight of the year for you?
I would have said so, yes. In the way of the BDO, they would have been beating some top quality players along the way. One of them I actually had a chat with, which was Scott Mitchell, and he actually said that after the game he just didn't know what happened, and the first three legs he didn't know what happened with it. The couple of 12 darters, 13 darters, and before he knew it, the game was over.
Do you think the BDO events you played this year have helped your game?
There's a lot more distractions, I would say, when you've been open and people can just watch and shout and things like that. So it does help you concentrate on what you're doing during the game. Plus, you never know, you could play somebody that you've never seen before, and they give you a really, really good game, and then for all you know, you're out, and you're thinking, wow, you've never heard of them before. But then it does push you to then go to the next competition and win, and use that to go forward with it.
Certainly, I think the other challenges as well, there's a lot of travelling involved, the venues and standards can vary between events, and also the games are often a lot shorter too.
They are, yeah. The formats are different. I mean, with the PDC, it's best of nine legs. Sometimes I could go to, for example, Switzerland. Went to Switzerland. One of them was, it was best of three sets, best of three legs. So it was a lot harder, and then the following day was best of seven. So the change in format does help my game in a way for certain competitions, but in a way it is a lot harder.
Obviously, the dropping of the restrictions last year was probably a factor, but was that the main thing that made you play more of the BDO circuit this year?
Yes, it was. When BDO lifted the ban of people that played at Q School to playing the BDO, I thought it was an opportunity for myself to get myself out there across the world and play against all these different players rather than playing the same people that I know week in, week out on the Challenge Tour.
Obviously, those restrictions have meant you've had a lot bigger fields in the Challenge Tour this year. You won an event last year, but do you think the standard has improved this year?
The standard has improved. There's so many different new players coming along. You've had a lot of people from the BDO go to the PDC Q School, and the standard is astronomical. You look at the youngsters, Leighton Bennett, for example, Beau Greaves, they're 13 and 15 years old. The standard of the youngsters now is coming up, and they are going to come and catch us, and that's what they're wanting to do. And we've got to do our best to try and keep these youngsters going. With all the youth academies and things like that, we've got to try and keep them there and keep helping them.
Those two obviously have been big stars this year, and you played some good players on the BDO. Who has impressed you most that you've played?
Who's impressed me most? Personally, this year, I would say that's had a really good year would be Wayne Warren. Wayne Warren has been really, really good, consistent throughout the BDO tour. Same with obviously with the youth tour, probably James Beaton and Leighton Bennett. Absolutely amazing, and not forgetting Beau Greaves has won absolutely everything at the moment in the ladies game, and she's certainly is a star for the future to be watching out for.
It's interesting that you say Wayne Warren, because you beat Wesley Harms at the British Open last year, and you played Martijn Kleermaker as well, who's had an amazing year.
Yes, yes, they have had an amazing year. It's the consistency. The consistency of Wayne Warren this year, he's shot up from, I think he was outside the top 10, way into the highest he's been at number 6, I believe, at the moment. So he's amazing, and he's such a gentleman in the game as well, like many of them are. But for me, it would have to be Wayne Warren for the player that's been the most consistent over a year, I would say.
Obviously, yesterday we finally got some news about the World Trophy, better late than never. Was it a relief to finally get some news?
It was for me. With obviously the World Trophy, the cut-off date for it was obviously the German Open, so it doesn't put me in the World Trophy this year, sadly. But it does give me that little bit of fight to say, right, well, I'm going to try and get in the top 16 for the World Masters. Seeing all the stuff on Facebook and Twitter about the World Trophy and people getting annoyed with it and things like that, it is good news to have it finally out there and people know exactly what they're doing. But I still see quite a lot of bad comments about it, saying, well, you know, they're doing this for this reason, doing that for that reason. And then they're jumping on to the next thing of, where's the World Masters going to be? Well, we've just got one sorted, let's wait and find out what happens with the next one. So it is a relief for a lot of players that I know of. Andy Hamilton was quite concerned about where it was as well. But it's a lot of relief for most players.
I can imagine it's also good for you that the qualifier is going to be quite local to you and the event as well in Lancashire.
They are, yes, yeah. In Blackburn, so it's only about 40 minutes from my house, so it's quite close for me to go and try and qualify for it.
And obviously the Masters coming up later this year. Is that a tournament you'd be looking forward to playing in again?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I've enjoyed the Masters for most of the time, even when I wasn't playing in it, watching it as well, the qualifiers down in Brimington. Absolutely amazing crowds, people watching. It would be good to get back there again and try and get into the seeded positions for it.
Well, you're well on the way to doing so. You haven't got too many points to defend in the coming months. And I've seen that you're signed up for Luxembourg at the end of this month and Sweden next month. What else is on the horizon for you?
On the horizon for me, there's quite a lot of competition. There's obviously I've got quite a few of the challenge tours coming up as well. But as for the BDO side of it, we have like Luxembourg, Sweden, and probably the French Open. There's another thing as well with the French Open, is on the British Isles rolling table to try and qualify for that. I'm second in that one, so it's going to be a toss up of whether to go to the French Open or the Scottish Classic to try and stay high up on the British Isle as well. So I don't know which one. More than likely the French Open for myself, and then on straight from the French to the West Midlands Open.
Scottish Classics at a Cat D, whereas France is a B and a C, I think.
So it's more than likely going to go, obviously, to the French. I think it's been played in Dunkirk this year. So I'll be doing more than likely the French Open, and on to West Midlands, and then back down to Chelsea for the England Classic.
And I guess you're in a somewhat privileged position in that sense. You're one of the few professional players on the BDO circuit, and you're well supported by Red Dragon, L Style, Modus, and a couple of others. How much does that security help for you?
It's helped me a lot. It really did. The first time I decided to not work and go full time, my now wife, we got married last week on the 6th.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. And she helped me a lot the first year. I think she put every penny that she had into doing it for me. Then Modus came along and helped me, and it's been quite a relief for them to take that pressure off me of having to find the money for the next competition, or, you know, find the travel costs, etc. So now that I can not work full time and just go out there and do the darts, practice 6-7 hours a day, which I do, and get on with it and do that as my full time job, it's amazing to do so.
You recently linked up with Framesmart as well, another sponsor.
I certainly did. That was quite a good one to get on board I got the message off Jason to be sponsored by the same company as Joe Cullen, Mark Webster. It's brilliant to be associated with that, and also the youngsters, James Beaton, Harry Gregory, and also Ben Smith as well, because we've all just moved over to Sport Icons Management, which is a partner of Modus. So it's good to be on board with all those and try and help the youth out as well while I'm there. But Frame Schwartz, they're brilliant guys to be there, and hopefully I'll do them proud along the way.
As I say, your form certainly suggests you will. Talking about the Challenge Tour, you had your best weekend of the year so far. Weekend just gone, picked up £200. How was the weekend overall for you?
Overall for me, it was slightly disappointing. The scoring was there. I missed quite a lot of doubles, to be fair. But it just makes me want to tighten that up and hit back on the practice board and see if I can finish the games off. But overall, some of the results I had, beating Nathan Lafferty, another very young player, very good young player. Richie Adhouse, who's obviously the experience on the Pro Tour. I believe he's there today, playing in Players' Championship 19. But for me to beat those players, I'm thinking, well, they have the experience. I do have the experience. But yeah, it was good to win those. Could have done better, but I move on to the next one and hopefully achieve the win again like I did in Peterborough last year.
Well, hopefully things will improve as the season continues to go on for you. I wanted to ask, where did your nickname Stretch, where did that come from?
Stretch came from my friends, my best friends, which are, they've been on the Pro Tour for a while, Joe Mern and Kirk Shepherd and Scott Taylor. And it's basically because I'm 6'6", and they decided to call me that. And that was after I had to change my nickname from Superman, due to obviously circumstances with Matt Clark having Superman as that. So I changed that, and I just asked my friend what I should be called, and they've always called me Stretch, and they said, why don't you just use that? So I did.
Do you find the height an advantage when you're playing?
For myself, no, because I sort of, I don't stand up straight. I get a very bad back sometimes. Leaning too far forward, but to certain players it will do. Vincent van der Waal, for example, he's a lot bigger than me, and Vincent Kamphuis, he's absolutely massive. But I think for an advantage, if you stand up straight, yes, it does, but you're still throwing from the same sort of distance. Some people say to me that I'm letting go out of my hand at a foot and a half away from the board, but I don't really see that myself, to be fair. But yeah, I wouldn't say it's an advantage for me, no.
And you say that obviously being professional in a sense has allowed you to practice 6-7 hours a day. Are you still a big practicer when you get to competitions?
Yes, yeah. Because when I get to competitions, the day before the competition, I won't do anything. I will relax, maybe take the missus out for a meal, etc. And then the following day, on the day of the Challenge Tour, we'll get there at 8 o'clock in the morning, hit the practice board for an hour and a half, then have a break, and then go back and do another half an hour before we start playing at about 10, quarter past 10, something like that.
Okay, so you're more of the Mervyn King kind of mould of just keep practice, keep practice, keep practice.
Yes, yes, for me it is. Sometimes it can get much, and I do it like a full-time job, and have a couple of days off a week. But most of the time I am on the practice board, say, between anything from 4 to 8 hours a day, depending on what I've got on during that day or week.
With the BDO this year, as I said at the start, you got to the quarterfinals of the British Open, last 16 Isle of Man, quarterfinals in Wales and Lincolnshire, and obviously the semis in Selsey. You're on track to play at the World Championships next year. Is that a target for you?
To play the Lakeside since I started playing darts. I was about 8 years old, so 21 years nearly. And it would be amazing to play on that stage. There's been so many professionals that have made a sport of darts and made history on that stage, that it would be an honour to be on that stage with some of the best players in the world.
Would that even be an issue if the venue were to change next year?
If the venue was to change, it wouldn't be an issue for me, because I'd be still in the World Championships, and I would still have my name as being down as a qualifier or a direct qualifier of the World Championships, so it wouldn't have an adverse effect. But it would be nice if it was kept at the Lakeside, with it being a historic venue, and many World Champions have come from there. It would be nice to be able to play on that stage.
And would beyond that, a tour card be the target?
Yes, yeah. A tour card for myself would be the main target. I've set myself a target for potentially getting a tour card by 2022. So hopefully, I'm in front of myself at the moment. I set myself a target of winning a Challenge Tour this year, but I did that last year, so I'm in front of that one. But yeah, it would be the very last sort of thing that I want to do, and get a tour card and compete with the likes of Michael Van Gerwen, Rob Cross, Michael Smith, etc., and try and get up there on the rankings, just as Glenn Durant has done recently.
He certainly has. It's been interesting to see the BDO Tour this year with him and Mark and a couple of others leaving. We're yet to really see one person dominate in the same way that those two really did before. Have you felt that at tournaments?
There's only one person that's stood out for me, now that Glenn and Mark and everyone that has gone, that's really dominated. I'd say a couple of people, which is Jim Williams and Leslie Harms. Mm. They have sort of put their foot straight there and said, right, well, now that them two have gone, they are the new Glenn and Mark. And they're up there, same with Dave Parletti as well. Mm. They've sort of gone into the footsteps of the two main BDO players that have gone over there.
Well, they have been very impressive at the top of the rankings at the moment, but you've certainly been another form player this season. It's been a pleasure to have you on, David. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Andrew.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with David. He's such a lovely guy, and I thought some of the comments he made in that interview were really refreshing. His aim of getting a tour card by 2022 is good. And it's nice to hear people actually not trying to rush things. I don't mean that in a patronising way at all. I think too often in sport, people are concerned that time is short at the top and careers aren't very long and you have to take opportunities where you can get them, but you can often get very long lifespan in darts with equipment and techniques changing all the time, and I think there really is no rush to get a tour card right now. I think some players get them too early and it really dampens their love of the game. Some players are happy not having one, but I think David set himself a realistic ambition, and the form he's showing, it's certainly an achievable ambition, and one I expect him to achieve, if not next year, probably in 2021 or definitely by 2022. He's a great player, and I'm sure that it's only a matter of time before he converts the form he's shown on the BDO back into the Challenge Tour with some deeper runs in those events. And also, I think it won't be long before we see him pick up a BDO ranking event title. I know he's playing in Sweden, probably France and the West Midlands, and I wouldn't be shocked if he wins one of them, and if it's not one of them, could well be one of the British ones in September. He's a really talented player, and he's been one of the most impressive, my personal opinion, in the first 6 months in the BDO. I think, in terms of a little mid-year review, I think the most impressive individual players this year, I think Dave Parletti's shown a great level of consistency. He's now top four in the world. I think he's been very impressive. I think Wesley Harms is starting to really, really assert himself. And obviously a lot of you will know I'm firmly aboard that Harms supporter bus. But I think he really is starting to dominate a little bit this year. Just needs to convert in those big majors. I think Jim Williams has started to hit form at the right time. I think he had a difficult sort of first 4 or 5 months of the year. But he started to hit form at the right time. I think Richard Veenstra has been good in patches. I think Martin Kleermacher has obviously probably been the most impressive individual, and his performance in Westfries, winning the double, and also his Welsh Open title win, I think probably some of the most impressive individual performances of the year. Also very impressed by Scott Waites in the Isle of Man. Mario van den Bogaard as well. Just seeing the fact that basically 14 months ago he played his first two events out of retirement, and then he fully came out of retirement to to really have a go at the tour, and he's just gone from strength to strength to strength. I know he's got some new sponsorship deals, and he's someone I'm really excited to see at the TV majors coming up in the next 4 or 5 months or so. Over on the ladies' side of things, I think it's actually been very interesting this year, because last year it was really that sort of top six, a dominant top six, and I think this year been some signs that they aren't perhaps as dominant as they were in previous years. I think Fallon Sherrick's been very, very impressive at times. I think Dieter Hedman, I think there were some times at the start of the year where you worried if kind of time was catching up on a little bit, but in, I say that, last 3-4 months she's looked absolutely fantastic, played some incredible darts, some very, very good averages as well. I think Anastasia Dobromyslova has played well as well in patches too. Lisa Ashton has been nowhere near her imperious best, but she's massively ahead at the top of the rankings, which, I mean, shows that she is going well in tournaments. Mikura Suzuki, it's been fantastic to see her playing in the UK, but she's proved that she's not unbeatable. She's not won anything since the Dutch Open in terms of BDO ranking events, which is certainly something. I know I've spoken very highly of Tori Kewish in the past. She's really impressed me this year. As has Laura Turner. It's been great to see Laura get into the top 10, firmly planted herself in that top 10 now, looking towards, pushing towards that top 6, I think, by the end of the year. Maria O'Brien too, she's started to deliver on her abilities on a more consistent basis. I think it's been really, a really good year in terms of player development, and I think certainly in the men's game there was the gap for it with Glenn, Mark, Scott Baker going, and Whitehead going, and some players taking their eye off the ball a little bit and not doing as much of the tour, maybe focusing on the challenge tour instead. I think it's been interesting to see some guys on the come up, and I think certainly going to be a very interesting close to the season. Right, now we get to the news. Where to start? Right, first bit of news that really came out was at the start of the month, and that was that the tournament formerly known as the Finder Masters, this year to be known as the Egmont Masters, was being cancelled. It was a real shame, as the tournament that was usually played in December in Egmond aan Zee in the Netherlands was a highlight of the BDO calendar and often was the perfect lead-in for Lakeside. It was a real gauge of who was playing well and who wasn't. The unique format often threw up some surprise results, but it was often a good indication of who played well there was going to have a good World Championships. I think there were some misnomers when the news came out. The term BDO crisis was bandied about, and I think that was quite unfair. The Finders, or the Egmont, whatever you want to call it, it wasn't organised by the BDO, and they've had money problems in the past. The sponsorship's often been a problem, and it was announced last year that the Hotels Iderdyne wouldn't be sponsoring them anymore. Finders wouldn't be sponsoring them anymore. So that was obviously... I think people knew there were money problems, or were there going to be money problems unless there was a big money backer found, and there wasn't. But that wasn't the BDO's fault. I think it's important to recognise that in terms of the BDO, the number of events they actually organise is quite small. Most are done by affiliate bodies in separate countries, be that the Luxembourg Darts Board or the French Darts Organisation or whatever that may be. They're organised by the affiliate groups. I know some people said that the BDO should have stepped in and saved it, and, well, I mean, it was €300,000 or whatever, so I doubt that was going to happen, but I think the comparison with the Vizcaya event that was saved last year, I think it was a bit unfair as well. And the Vizcaya was booked and looked like it was going to get cancelled about 4-6 weeks out. It was a Cat A+, and most players had really laid out money that they definitely weren't going to get back. Whereas no qualifiers had really been confirmed for the Egmont Masters yet. No dates were firmly set in stone. I think with the Vizcaya event, it was a big ranking event. It was an open competition, and a lot of people had lost money already on it, so they stepped in. And that even had to drop down from an A-plus to an A. But I think losing the Egmont is a real shame, and I hope that they can find a sponsor or find a way of doing it in the coming years, because it's certainly one of my favourite competitions. A bit of good news for the BDO came... I think it was the 12th of July, and that was the fact that the BDO signed a new 5-year deal with 180 and L-Style. The announcement was that starting next month, 180 and L-Style will begin their relationship with the BDO. 180 will supply the dartboard, so the Gladiator 3s, and that will be in effect in all county matches and all BDO ranking events and their TV majors as well. 180 will also have the rights to design dual-branded dartswear, whilst L-Star would be the BDO's exclusive partner for barrels, shafts and flights. In addition, both will sponsor the World Masters starting in October of this year, and it will be the 180 L-Star World Masters. Okay, that perhaps doesn't have the same ring to it that Winmar did, but I think it's a good move, despite the fact that there was a lot of criticism from people as soon as it came out. Winmar gave the BDO notice about a year ago that they weren't going to renew their partnership, so the BDO had to do something, and I actually think a five-year deal with two growing darts brands is a pretty good move considering their position they're in. The 180 boards are good. I certainly think they're better than the unicorn ones in some respects, although the 180 ones definitely aren't on the level of the Blade 5s currently in use. But I think this is the sort of deal the BDO had to target if the organisation wanted some degree of longevity, and it locks them into a good deal that hopefully will allow them to grow, will allow them to work with growing groups like 180 and L-Style. It will give them more of a door into Asia, but it will also, I think it will give the BDO relationship where they can grow, they can expand, and also they can perhaps experiment with a few things. Might be a bit naive of me, but a man's entitled to hope, isn't he? Also, this deal secures sponsorship for the World Masters, which hopefully should mean some better prize money, and also perhaps should make it easier to secure a venue. And now we move on to the exciting bit. We finally have news about the World Trophy. I genuinely thought we were never going to get anything, and then finally, out of nowhere, this week, we get the nod. We get on Monday, we find out that the event is going to be played at the King George's Hall in Blackburn at the end of August. That deal is also a three-year one, meaning that the 2020 and 2021 incarnations of the tournament will also be played in Blackburn. I think that's fantastic. It secures the future of a tournament that has been up in the air more times than I care to remember. Certainly this year and last year have been particularly bad. It should mean that getting a sponsor for next year and the year after are a lot easier. And tickets for this year's event are going on sale through the King George's Hall box office from next Monday. And whilst I think flogging them this year will be a struggle, knowing that you've got the venue secured next year, knowing that you can pencil the dates in right at the start, they can hopefully get tickets on sale earlier, get their media done earlier, get their advertising done earlier, and hopefully, fingers crossed, that'll mean that the events will be close to a sellout next year. Again, naive, but hopefully, something locked in, they can be better organised next year. And I think I have to tip my hat to Des Jacklin somewhat. Finally, he spoke quite forcefully in a letter to the counties over the weekend, and I think he's done a good job. The King George's Hall looks like a really good venue, and a three-year deal is fantastic. It's exactly what the BDO needs to do. They can't keep going on a one year, and then you have this problem every year. I think they need to look at certainly long-term deals that will allow them to build and grow and give players some more security. I know there was some kerfuffle online earlier about prize money. Looked like the women's prize pot had gone down despite Des promising that he wanted to put it up, but that now appears to have been slightly false information, and that the women's prize pot will be exactly the same as the past. I am looking forward to the World Trophy. Unfortunately, the late notice and the fact it's up in Blackburn, up in the north of the country, means that I probably won't be able to get up from London for it, which is a shame. I've already got some prior commitments, but otherwise I 100% would have been there. I really enjoy the match play format of it, and I think there's some really great players qualified. I'll get to them in a bit, but there's some really great players qualified, and I think there could be some real shocks, real impressive performances, and some real breakthrough moments for some of the videos up-and-coming players that we've spoken about loads in the last few months. Qualifier, it's going to be played the day before, as suggested by Oki Balboa and myself on the last episode. It's also a chat I'd had with Gary Stafford and a couple of others that it was probably going to have to be the day before, because when else were they going to do it? And I know the fact they've got to tow the Oki in the morning is a bit of a blow, because that will rule out a number of players, because they're going to have to perhaps take the Wednesday off to travel up, and then to have to take the Thursday off from work, which a lot of players on the BDO Tour can't afford to do, and that's going to rule out players, which will mean it'll be a small field, and that could well mean that the qualifier favours local players, one of whom may well be David Evans. But I think David would have a very, very good chance of qualifying regardless of the strength of the field. There'll be four men's spots available in that qualifier and two ladies' spots. The other issue that's come up has been about the youth and the issue that the youth players aren't eligible to play in the qualifier. That information was known beforehand. That wasn't the BDO's rules. It wasn't as though that's a change. I do understand people's frustrations, though, especially for something like the World Trophy, where there isn't a separate youth component. I think it's a tough one. I think you have to weigh up in the question in your mind, do you have any age restrictions? Or do you have some? Do you go with over 16s can play? But then that rules out Leighton Bennett. That rules out Beau Greaves. I think that would rule out James Beaton and a couple of others. Do you go under 14s? Do you go... I think you guys understand what I mean. I think you either have to choose some restrictions, which are still going to be punitive because there will be examples that people will point to and say, well, that's arbitrary. Or do you have no restrictions? I think in terms of press, if the BDO wants to grow, I think maybe scrap the youth entry requirement or create a youth component of the World Trophy. But that then opens a whole different can of worms that I don't really think they want to have to deal with. We're not going to see it change for this tournament, we know that, but hopefully it will be something that gets thought about. The BDO AGM is next month, start of next month, so hopefully it's something that gets thought about and maybe can be put into effect for events later down the line. You often need something to go wrong for something to be done about it, and hopefully this will be the, well, but people putting their foot down, showing that, well, actually, the young kids were allowed to play more of the adult events this year, and look what they've done. They've gone and absolutely smashed it. Leighton's been fantastic, and of course Beau Greaves is on another level, and it'll be a real shame not to see her here, because I think on form she'd probably be a favourite for the whole tournament if she were to qualify. But talking of who has actually qualified, I think a lot of people will be forgiven for having forgotten who's actually qualified. I mean, the cut-off was after the German Open in April. I know I'd forgotten a couple, but so there's 28 already confirmed for the men. I say 28, in reality it's actually only 27, and 14 for the women. Well, who will be in the men's and women's competitions, and who will be seeded? Because I think this is the other interesting thing. You have a cut-off that's going to be 4 whole months before the tournament. The seedings are going to be very, very interesting. So provisionally, the field for the men's is as follows. So top seed will be Richard Veenstra. Second seed will be Jim Williams. Third seed, Wesley Harms. Fourth seed, Scott Mitchell. Fifth seed, Mikhail Unterbuchner. Sixth seed, Dave Bartoletti. Seventh, Gary Robson. Eighth, Scott Waits. Ninth, Wayne Warren. Tenth, Willem Mandigers. 11, Chris Landman. 12, Mario van den Bogaard of Belgium. 13, Ross Montgomery. 14, Andy Hamilton. 15, Dirk Telnikers. 16, Carl McKinstry. Nick Kenny and Martin Kleermacher also qualified for the event. They qualified through their ranking at the time, but they will be unseeded. They will be in the other half of the draw. So Nick Kenny, Martin Kleermacher, very tough first round draws for anyone. Also, a first round draw for one of the seeds will be reigning World Masters champion Adam Smith-Neill. And then we get into the regional qualifiers. So from the USA, we'll have Joe Chaney. Roger Janssen of Belgium will be the Western European representative, whilst New Zealand will be represented by Mark McGrath. David Cameron will be there from Canada, whilst Eastern Europe will have Sebastian Steyer as their rep. Paul Hogan is at top of the British Isles table, whilst Brian Lochan is top of the Baltic and Scandinavian table. Justin Thompson will be the Australian qualifier, and then we get to that gender fluid icon that is TBC, which is the Asian qualifier. I have no idea how they're going to work out the Asian qualifier, quite frankly. The Japan Open is at the end of this month. They might pick the Japan Open winner, but I mean, that could be anything. I don't know whether they'll go through some sort of WDF measure or what, or whether they'll abandon the Asian qualifier at this stage and they end up going on the person who was next in the rankings, which could really be anyone. I think breaking that men's field down, I think Roger Janssen's an interesting one because he has played none of the tour since doing well at the World Championships at the start of the year. Obviously, we know what Paul Hogan and Dave Cameron and Mark McGrath are capable of. I think Justin Thompson's an interesting one because I'm very high on Tomo's ability. And you see in Australia, they play longer format games in their singles competitions than you often do in Europe. Most Aussie singles finals, Darts Australia finals, are best of 13 legs, and obviously the opening round games at the World Trophy will be best of 11. So Justin Thompson will have more experience of those longer games than some of the players in this field. I think Veenstra being top seed is interesting because that provisionally would put him on course for a second round meeting with Carl McKinstry. And I think also you look at these seeds and you think where the rankings are now. Ross Montgomery, not in the top 16 anymore. Dirk Telnikers, I don't even think he's in the top 50 anymore. He's barely played this year. Carl McKinstry dropped right down because he had a poor weekend in Selsey. You think, well, those guys are still seeded. They can have a very, very deep run. They could benefit from their seeding. And that would then perhaps set them up for a strong last month of the season. I think Clearmarker, Kenny and Smith Neal not being seeded, I think they're going to be danger men to watch, as will be whoever gets through the qualifier, especially as it could well be a reduced field. Some very, very talented players. You've got the likes of Nick Fulwell, Gino Voss. You've also got some of the PDC Challenge Tour guys that we've seen play a few events this year, like Rob Collins, Andy Jenkins, Darren Johnson, Jamie Caven. We might see some others get involved. We've got Diego Portella, Cody Harris. I think you might actually get a pretty strong lineup in the end. You've got Brian Dawson as well, who's won ranking events before. He's played at World Championships before. I don't know. I think the qualifier could be quite interesting because it could be a small field, but it could be quite a stacked one as well. Moving on to the ladies' field, top seed will be Lisa Ashton, second seed Lorraine Wynne-Stanley, third seed Dieter Hedman, fourth seed Eileen de Graaf, fifth seed Fallon Sherrick, sixth seed Anastasia Dobromyslova, seventh seed Laura Turner, eighth seed Trina Gulliver, and then the non-seeded players will be Maria O'Brien, Casey Gallagher, Sharon Prinz, Paula Jacqueline, Corin Hammond, and the BDO Lakeside World Champion Mikuru Suzuki. I don't know why I sounded slightly like Richard Ashton then. That was very odd. I think it's a strong ladies' field. I think the seedings are interesting in the ladies' event because, as we've seen, it's the same often. 16 ladies who are last 16 in most competitions. Most of the ladies on any given day can beat each other. They can whitewash each other both ways. They can be involved in nip and tuck thrillers. So I think ladies' competition could be quite wide open. I think Sherrick's probably the one I've got my eye on, but obviously Suzuki loves that stage. I think O'Brien can have a deep run. Casey Gallagher showed at the World Masters last year. She's very, very capable under the spotlight. I think it could certainly be interesting. I don't know who the ladies' qualifiers could be. Again, that could be an interesting one, but there are a lot of talented British women. We've seen Yvonne Taylor have a few deep runs of late. She might be someone worth watching. I don't know if Roz Bulmer will play, but obviously she was so fantastic at the World Trophy last year. There's a lot of talented women out there, and again, the ladies qualifier could be a small field, but it could be quite a deep one as well. Just a tidbit, sort of a unrelated note, but it was connected to Winmel. It was some great news earlier in the week that the World Disability Dance Association will have their first World Championships next year in conjunction with Winmel. Event we played at the Dutch Open weekend, which is great because Dutch Open's always a great weekender, and I think it's even better with the addition of the WDDA competition. It's also, I think, nice. It's going to stand on its own. It's not going to be in conjunction with the World Championship and feel like it's being tagged on the end. I think it's going to be its own thing, and it's going to take pride of place on that weekend. It's going to be played on one day, and I think all the attention, all the focus on it will be that. And obviously, there are some incredibly talented disability darts players, Vincent Dont. Obviously, Belgian Supervan, Jackie Gertels, who also got Ricky Chilton, and a couple of others as well. So, great news about that. Just thought I'd give it a cheeky mention. So, what's to come over the next month or so? Well, we've got the Youth Weekender, which is being played at the Five Lakes Hotel in Essex this weekend. There are some issues with the numbers after the venue change, but the deadline extended to today, which is obviously the day of recording. So I'm not going to have final numbers for you, but some good names for the events already, like Dutch Open girls winner Lely Brussel, Brian Roman, Leighton Bennett, Connor Arbery, Joe Reed, Brad Phillips, Lennon Craddock, and a few others. And hopefully the field will get to a slightly bigger number by the time the competition is played over the weekend. End of July, and we'll be back to ranking action with the 180 Luxembourg Open and Masters. It's a Cat B for men in both events and a Cat C for women in both. Dieter Hedman won both the ladies' competitions last year, whilst the men's were won by Roger Janssen and Mario van der Bogaard. No Janssen this year so far for the men's, which is a real shame, but further strengthens my suspicion that he might well be going to Euro Q School at the start of next year. Some big names already signed up for the men's are Leighton Bennett, Francis Carragher, Jeffrey van Egdom, Andy Hamilton. Ted Hanke will be starting his comeback in Luxembourg. Interesting to see both how long that lasts, but also how well the count does. One of the biggest personalities in the BDO. It'd be great to see him at least somewhere near his best. One more run would be nice. Cody Harris, Diego Portela, Martin Kleermacher, Thomas Jonghans, Dave Parletti, Co Stompy Jr., Mikael Unterbuchner, and obviously the man Dave Evans said earlier in the show was one of the most impressive on the tour, Wayne Warren. In ladies' events, standout names are Laura Turner, Aileen de Graaf, Dieter Edman, and Ros Bulmer. Same weekend, we have the Japan Open, which, fingers crossed, still says Cat B on the BDO website for the events on the July the 28th in Tokyo. Last year's comps won by Hiroshi Tanji and Mikuru Suzuki. This year, though, there'll be 500,000 yen on the line for the men's winner, which is more or less $3,500. Time of recording, there were 72 entrants for the men's event and 14 for the women's. No Mikuru Suzuki as yet, but you'd expect her to be signed up by the time entries close, whilst big names in the men's were defending champion Tanji, Shingo Enomata, and the Australian Rob Modra. Mentioned earlier, you've got the BDO AGM, August the 4th in Walsall. And on that same day, Sunday, August the 4th, it'll be the Pacific Masters in Moama, New South Wales, Australia. It's a Cat C for the men. Well, sorry, it was a Cat C for the men last year, but it's a Cat D this year, whilst it's a B for the women this time around, after being a Category C in 2018. Last year's winners were Tori Kewish and Peter Machin. On Wednesday the 7th of August, the New Zealand Open will take place. It's a D, Category D for the men and a C for the women. 2018's editions won by Tahuna Irwin and Judy Fenton. And it's at these events where the Kiwi World Championship qualifier could be confirmed. It's the penultimate Kiwi event of the season. And at the moment, Darren Heroini is 18 points clear of Mark McGrath. So anything less than a quarter-final for Mark McGrath, say Heroini gets no points, but Mark McGrath has to outscore Heroini in this event by at least 4 points to give himself a shot at staying in with only one more ranking event to come. That's obviously a rarity, a midweek event. And that weekend, the 9th to the 11th of July, there'll be a Category B doubleheader in Belgium with the Antwerp Open and the Belgium Open. Casey Gallagher and Wouter Vaas won the Antwerp events last year, whilst the Belgium Open events were won by Glenn Durrant and Lisa Ashton. Certainly guaranteed to have a new winner in the Belgian Open men's competition then. Ros Bulmer, Anastasia Dobromyslova, Aileen de Graaf and Dieter Hedman all signed up for the ladies' events. Whilst in the men, some of the names that stood out to me when I was looking at the sign-up sheets earlier were Andy Bartons, Brian Roman, Ryan Hogarth, the Frenchman Thibaut Tricol, and there was a few others that stood out as well, but they were the main four that I thought I'd pluck out alongside your regulars. And then the last event, hopefully before we record again, will be the Swedish Open and Classics. Great event in Sweden mid-August. So the Open is a Category A for the men and the women. Last year was won by Daniel Day for the men. And then you have also the Swedish Classic. So you have a Swedish Ladies Classic, which is a Category C, and then the Gentlemen's Swedish Classic on the Sunday, which is a Category D. They're always good events, and as you can always bank on a strong home contingent, especially with the PDC Nordic and Baltic Tour. Daniel Larsson went very well last year. But I think the Swedish Open will be a really great competition as always. We know David Evans will be there, as will be Wayne Warren and a few others. I mean, August and September are packed as the season draws to a manic close. They're both packed months. You've got the French doubleheader in August. You've got the Scottish Classic and the West Midlands Open. And then we've got, obviously, the World Trophy. And then, obviously, in September, you've got the Belfry Open, the Bruges Open, Bridlington doubleheader, Chelsea doubleheader, the match play. I mean, there's an awful lot going on. And be some very frantic checking of ranking tables and stuff by the end of September as we look at the cutoff and who will be the names confirmed for the World Championship. The aim at the moment is to be back in the middle of next month with an extensive World Darts Trophy preview, hopefully a couple of interviews and a review of the action that has taken place between now and then. Well, thank you for listening, and until next time.